Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.
Anyway, after World War II, Germany, or more precisely West Germany, managed to transform itself into a stable and prosperous economy. It's in an astonishingly short period of time, but that took hard work, billions in foreign aid, and a collective amnesia about what had just happened. Harold Jenner is the author of Aftermath, which looks at the decade after the end of World War II. Sean Whiteside translated the book into English, and he joins us now on News Talk. Afternoon, Sean.
Good afternoon.
Could you start by maybe giving us some sort of a sense of what Germany was like in the 2 or 3 years after the war ended? Was it very chaotic and lawless?
It was completely chaotic and lawless, unbelievably so. I mean, when you think of the images of it, what you first see is the ruined cities, all that rubble that they had to clear away, which they thought they wouldn't be able to clear away, but eventually they did. But more so than that, you had 40 million displaced people out of a population of 75 million. So you had people who had been released from labor camps, you had soldiers coming home, you had people who had been expelled from the eastern territories, all wandering about, all hiding in country lanes and what have you, and sheltering from the rain, or sheltering in houses in the cities with rain pouring through the roof. And the Allies struggling to work out how on earth they were going to sort all this out.
And you'd imagine the returning soldiers and the people leaving labour camps might have had some place to go. Those 12 million that you mentioned from the Eastern Territories,
they'd
nowhere to go and weren't made particularly feel welcome.
They weren't particularly, and they were billeted, a lot of them, in rural areas, and a lot of them had come from urban areas, and they weren't used to this whole country life thing. But it slowly turned out that they were the resourceful ones. They were the ones who knew how to cope with difficult situations like that, and the ones who started rebuilding, farms, who started rebuilding factories and companies. So they gradually became a wee bit more popular, you might say.
And is it the case that because there was so much focus at that time on, I suppose, initially just survival and then trying to economically rebuild the country, no one gave much thought to what had, you know, the past, what had just happened, the horrors that had been committed by the Nazi regime?
They kind of blocked it out. They also thought, when you had your famous Nuremberg trials that everybody was talking about in 1946, and when the generals were executed and taken away and their ashes scattered, I think a lot of people who were, as you say, just primarily concerned with survival, basically decided there that they'd got the bad guys and that was that, and there was nothing more to worry about, and they could get on with rebuilding their lives.
And no sense that German society in general was complicit?
Not at that point. That comes later.
Yes. And I suppose that also a kind of a decision that the Allies made was that because there were so many Nazis who were running things, they couldn't arrest them all.
They couldn't arrest them all, and they quietly appointed them to quite important administrative roles, political roles even. The reforming, the liberal Chancellor, Konrad Adenauer, appointed a guy called Globke, who had been a very senior Nazi, as head of his chancellery. And there was outrage at this. And he said, you don't throw away the dirty water until you've got clean water.
I suppose it makes a certain amount of sense.
It's pragmatic, I
yes,
think.
Yes, yeah. Also, the outside world probably didn't view Germany very favourably, nonetheless.
I think that's probably true.
And so within Germany, or West Germany, did that like transform into a degree of self-pity? You know, why do they all hate us?
I don't think it was so much why do they all hate us as why do we have to put up with all this poverty and awfulness. There was a degree of self-pity. All the soldiers coming home, lots of them were shell-shocked. They were traumatized. The kids didn't know who they were and didn't like them very much. Their wives, in many cases, weren't very happy to have them back. So there was a general feeling of, amongst lots of large sections of the population, that they'd been somehow mistreated or undervalued or whatever, because it wasn't their fault after all.
Mm. Now, it's often referred to as an economic miracle, but it wasn't really miraculous. It was very, very deliberate.
It was deliberate, because basically the Allies didn't want Germany exploding in their faces again. So they wanted a prosperous Germany that worked. The Marshall Plan, the Americans put in $1.4 billion, I think it was, into reviving the economy. And then they had a thing which was pretty important in German history, which was the currency reform, which isn't terribly interesting to go into, but it was very important because it started the economy, it kick-started the economy again. You started almost with zero, and it was like a new beginning. And basically, the factories, most of the factories were still going. They'd been converted, lots of them, into munitions factories, but they were revived for normal manufacturing. And the economy gradually grown back into gear again.
And I assume that there was a... Well, they didn't want Germany rearing on them again, the Allies, I mean, but also given that the Cold War had just started and Germany was on the border of that, so to speak, so they needed a very strong ally there.
Not just on the border, half of it was in, on the other side. And that's, yeah... that's when the new bit of history begins, I suppose, really. And the Western Allies realise that the whole thing has shifted, and they've got to make Western Germany a secure place that espouses Western democratic values.
Also, I was interested to read about how during this period, how it affected sexual relationships. There seemed to be far more women than men, and a lot of the available men weren't great, from their point of view, at least.
That does seem to have been the case, yes. But also you've got to remember that while the men were away, the women had been running things. They'd been running the factories, they'd been driving cranes, they'd been operating lathes. And when the husbands came back, they were edged gradually back into the home, and they weren't always too happy about that. But yes, as you say, many more women than men. According to one film called Ballad of Berlin, there were six women to every man. And there was a lot of partying going on, which isn't something that you associate necessarily with the immediate post-war period.
It is a kind of a curious one. You did say, though, that if you like, German society having some sort of reckoning with its past didn't come until, I suppose, it was the 1960s. Would it have been that period when that really started to happen?
I would say so. The book suggests, and I think there's probably a lot of truth in this, that when Dad came back from the war and Dad was angry and the kids didn't know who he was and didn't like him, it started out a generational conflict, I think, really, that exploded in the 1960s. One other thing, though, is that it was the refusal to accept the guilt for what had happened that shaped mentalities in a funny sort of way. The philosopher Hannah Arendt tried to talk about what had happened. She said, "What about my family? What about them?" And people just changed the subject. So it wasn't that they felt terrible guilt about what had happened to the Jewish population. They just didn't want to think about it at all. And that didn't come, I would say, until the 60s and 70s.
Presumably then there was still a lot of anti-Semitism in that society.
It's not something that comes across very much, certainly in this book. As it was as if the war had drawn a line under that, in a way. And the only times it pops up really... are when you have Jewish editors appointed by the Allies to run newspapers or broadcasting companies or whatever, and some other journalists will snipe at them for their Jewish background. It doesn't seem to be a thing that really happens on the ground very much.
Yeah. The book is called Aftermath, Life in the Fallout of the Third Reich, 1945 to 1955, by Harold Jenner. Sean Whiteside is the translator. Sean, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sean. Thank you for having me on.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Brought to you by Avant Money. Think you're getting the best value from your bank? Think again.